What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack, your comic book review show.
Alex had that late afternoon espresso.
I did, actually. I had an Americano.
I can tell. Your eyes are fully crossed.
Oh, my God. I'm going nuts right now. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we review a bunch of comics to come out this week. And just because I wanted to get Pete and Justin real good, we got a bunch of other advanced reviews coming out on The Stack today. How many titles do we have? I haven't even counted it. What is it?
There's 3, not 000? That many numbers.
4,000? Yeah. Infinite?
You're crying a blood tear right now, like some sort of James Bond villain.
Guys, let's get into this before I die. All right, first up, let's kick it off on a cheery note. Heroes in Crisis, number 6 from DC Comics.
That's where you're starting?
Yeah, let's start it up. Start
oh,
up.
Oh, my God.
So, if you haven't been keeping up with Heroes in Crisis, there's a place called Sanctuary, which a bunch of superheroes, some supervillains go to repair their psyches, to deal with
more
their
like
issues.
Get murdered.
And a bunch of them got murdered, and we've been trying to figure out over the course of the series exactly what happened. We got a couple more clues this issue, but mostly it was a flashback to how...
Flash.
Nah. I get it. To how there? Harley Quinn ended up there and what exactly she was doing there when ostensibly, even though she's in Suicide Squad, she's a villain instead of a hero.
Also, a lot of great touching moments between her and Poison Ivy.
Yeah. Now, how'd you feel about this issue?
I mean, I like this series a lot. I know it's like a little controversial and people are sort of like, tell us already. There's
a
lot of
getting frustrated,
but the storytelling is so good, and the just the observations and the character voices are so detailed and specific that it's good.
But
you don't ever see heroes written this way.
That's true.
Interesting.
But it's eating like it would have been one thing if we're kind of doing this thing like okay, we're getting to know superheroes, how they think, what they're about. But the fact that like there's this giant murder, we don't know why we're seeing this, we don't know who's doing what. It's a little frustrating.
It is crazy that a comic book would try to hold a reveal till like the end. Right. But I know
and a mystery story too, because usually Hercule Poirot will come in and be like, "That guy did it," and now another 300 pages.
Yes, that's exactly right. And for those of you at home, I don't know what Alex is talking about because I'm under the age of 60.
Come on, man! You didn't see Kenneth Branagh and Murder on the Orient Express, the hit movie from maybe a year ago or
not a hit movie, and the only people that watched it have died. Since they watched it.
What about the ABC murders on Prime Video starring John Malkovich?
Sure, I believe you. That's peak TV, and that's on a different peak than I'm on.
Yeah, sure. I'm actually, I think, halfway between you guys, where I definitely did start to feel this issue like, okay, let's get to it a little bit. Particularly because
it just
cover,
felt like they were going to get to it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like I'm not dying for it right now, but this issue felt like you're going to find out. And then they were like, nope.
Yeah, there's definitely that structure, particularly because it was all, for the most part, taking place in the past.
Yeah.
Where it's like, here's a key piece of information for you guys. And I'm sure it's there. I'm sure the way that it is structured, when we get to the end of the series, we're going to go, oh, of course, the clues were there all along. We just didn't quite see
them. I don't think so.
One thing that I will say I really liked about this issue in particular that has been slowly building over the course of the series is Tom King as the writer clearly reclaiming weird, super strange parts of DC continuity and letting them be blown out with full page splashes, like literally blown out. That wasn't necessarily present at the beginning of the book, which started as a big fight scene.
Right.
And it's built, and it's actually gotten slower as it's gone on, which I think is interesting.
But I do think the what he's doing with the panel structure and the different color palettes, him and the artist, the different color palettes that they're using with the different character points of view here is so cool. And I love just the caveman guy talking about the different philosophers
really?
Throughout history.
You like that?
That was so cool. That was so
fun.
Cool. It was great.
It was fun stuff. Very fun series.
I'm in crisis. I'm Justin in crisis.
Quick question before we move
on. I'm just in crisis.
Would you go to Sanctuary?
How many more issues do we have?
300. There's 300 issues, and then
there can't be that many.
Yeah, the follow-up, they're going to reveal it in the second, which is called Infinity Heroes in Crisis.
Yes, I think there's three. There's three more issues.
Yeah, 6 of 9.
Yes.
Okay, so I can wait then.
Oh, good.
Good, man.
Jesus.
Oh, God, so I love that.
Let's move on to another title from Boom Studios, Buffy the Vampire Slayer number 2. Now, Pete and I talked about this on The Stack.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, cool, guys. Cool. Yeah. Very cool.
What?
It's great.
I'm just giving a little bit of context.
You're cheating on me in a way.
What I'm saying is that we were both very surprised by the first issue of this.
Yes.
Particularly because it almost out of nowhere, I guess, unless you read a lot of interviews about it, it presents an entirely different continuity for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, yeah. Upstates it, changes stuff, includes characters from the series. But ultimately, I think what I expressed was I felt like, as a Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan, I was completely thrown by reading the issue, but once I got used to it, I was into it. I could confirm this issue, I loved it. Like, I think this is so good. It's taking a lot of lessons, particularly from history of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and bring them forward to the modern era in a really good way.
I'm shocked that you say that, because I'm looking at a panel right now where she is completely disrespecting books and establishment. She's got her feet up in the library like she owns the place.
Yeah, right. 60 the disrespect.
Yeah, exactly.
Of that alone is
it's your library.
Infallible. That's
you love that's where you check your emails, the library, right?
Right. Yeah.
Nice. Pete has a rotary cell phone.
I make myself a tuna sandwich. Wait a week. Yeah. Leave it out in the sun, and then go eat it as I check my email.
Nice. Oh, and a little bit of light pornography at the library. Yeah. I agree with you. I think it's nice, and I'm not like. I like Buffy, the TV show, the series, the comic book series. I liked a lot how crazy it got over the years, mm-hmm. over the seasons. I think it's nice to see your favorite characters meet again for the very first time.
Yeah. And the way that they're repainting stuff, if you do know the series, all of this stuff is familiar to you. You have a suspicion of how things are going to go, but yeah. clearly they're going very differently.
You see Spike and you're like, ooh, this yeah. guy's got it going on.
Exactly. And I think the character work was really nice and different and riffed off of particularly Xander and Willow. The differences with them, I think, was really good. We got to meet Cordelia this issue. A very different take on Cordelia in particular, but it's good stuff. Yeah. I'm really enjoying this.
What do you think about her being a track star? You guys excited about that? It's a big reveal.
Well, I was actually struck by that because Sunnydale High, back in the series, you always got the same shots because there were only a limited number of places they could film in that actual school. Mm-hmm. Getting to see a track was actually kind of nice.
Wow. Sorry, look at this. Flashback to Zalvin's high school days.
Thing to geek out of.
I was a big track guy.
Real track rat.
You were a track guy?
Yeah.
Events.
Yeah.
I used to do the hurdles.
Is that for real?
For what length?
Yeah, I was there for like a week.
I think you mean you did the hurdle. You did one.
I signed up for the hurdles and I couldn't do it.
Why did you do that?
I don't know.
That looks very hard.
Yeah, I also tried to fall down. I also tried to do shot put. I couldn't do that.
I feel like Alex, you should be good at running before you jump in a hurdle. Throw a hurdle in. Literally, it's like it's like adding a hurdle.
Yeah, that's is that where the expression comes from?
I think so.
That's interesting. Moving to an Image comic book of The Wicked and Divine number 42. This was a huge issue.
Yeah, so much going on.
So I don't know about you guys. I love this series, but I get into every issue going, well, I don't know what's going on.
I agree all the time. And like, I'm an astute reader. I've been around the back of the barn when it comes to reading comic books for many years. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, sure.
And so like, but every time I pick it up, I'm like, oh, wait, what exactly is happening? And I don't quite know. So, and I think that's, I don't know if it's purposeful, but it feels like Kieran Gillen's certain bits of his comic book work is this type of storytelling.
Yeah, until this issue, though.
Yeah,
where then suddenly it was all laid out, and it completely floored me because normally I do expect that, and I kind of expected we'd never quite get an explanation or a... comprehensible is the wrong word, but something that wasn't laid out in a very esoteric way. But here they very plainly explain the plot. They explain the villain. They explain the purpose of everything. It's great. I'm very excited for the last couple of issues.
I just want to say I am so bored of men like you.
Yeah, yeah. Great. Good. That's a line from the comic, but also true about Pete and our friendship.
Yes. Anyway, this is great. If you're not on board already, go back and read all
four. Alone is worth it. I have no idea what's going on.
There are three issues left?
Three issues left.
But it's very entertaining and definitely worth picking up.
I like how this issue also sort of scooped up all the standalone comics throughout the different ages of Wicked and Divine.
Yeah, he talks about that a little bit in the back matter where he says it's funny that people think, oh, I'll get back and read those later. And he's like, well, we put them in that order for a reason.
That wasn't an accident.
Right, exactly. Moving on to a Marvel comic book, Captain Marvel, Braver and Mightier, number one. This is a little bit of a one-shot. teeing up. There's a movie coming out. I don't know if you guys knew. Yeah. What'd you guys think about this?
This felt very much like a, hey, you've seen this movie poster. Here's a story that's about that character.
Right.
So to me, it didn't really offer a lot of insights into the character or like who she is in the Marvel Universe and where she's going. It was just sort of like splashy, well-drawn Captain Marvel story.
Yeah, there's two parts of the story. There's Captain Marvel having a big space battle, and then there's two kids who are waiting to interview Captain Marvel.
Big interview she has.
I gotta tell you, I would have wanted the entire issue to be about those kids. I wished it was just from their perspective, because I like them talking about Captain Marvel, what she means, agonizing over asking them a question. There was that Alex Ross series, Marvels, which was the same sort of street level thing from the direction of photographers and reporters and everybody. And I think that would have been neat. Again, I think, like, to your point, if you already know Captain Marvel, you don't necessarily need to pick this up. But at least that part of the issue, I think, is enjoyable and very sweet.
It was tough because I know why they kind of broke it up to give you a little action and then a little story and stuff like that. But, like, to me, when she's talking about how important the interview is during that fight, I'm like, well, we don't need to see this fight because she cares about the interview. That's what we care about now. So,
yeah.
And it was weird because I care about fights a lot. Yeah, so, you know, to not care about
it's a well-drawn fight, I'll say that.
Yeah. I also think there's some fatigue at this type of story, particularly with Captain Marvel. I feel like there's been so many sort of reboots and standalone issues of her lately that are just like...
Well, and I will say, if you are looking for a Captain Marvel book, the current ongoing Captain Marvel book by Kelly Thompson is so good. So much fun.
That's great.
Yeah, definitely pick that up, that series up. Let's move on to an advance review coming out March 6th, The $6 Million Man from Dynamite. This is from our friend Chris Hastings, who's going to be on the show in a couple of weeks to actually talking about this very book. We won't get into spoilers here. I thought this was super fun.
It's funny. It has a tone that I didn't expect. Yeah. So I think we can talk about this at least a little bit. The tone of the book is sort of James Bond, but he's like a bit of a doof. Yeah. He's like
that's sort of a good word for it.
He doesn't quite know exactly how to do it, and he's bad at talking to people, which is a fun take. It's a take you don't see a ton of. So I'm down.
Yeah, I thought this was a very, very enjoyable, great kind of like introduction to this world. I'm excited for more.
Yeah, it's. I'm trying to think how to talk about this without talking about spoilers, but I don't know much about the $6 Million Man. I think you know that, like, he has bionic legs, a bionic arm, and bionic eye.
And he was made, the original TV series was made in, like, the 70s when it was like, whoa, that's fucking expensive. Right. And now it's sort of like, oh, it's sort of fine amount of money.
And also it's like, why is just that part of you bionic? And what does that mean? And I think that's what Hastings is playing off of there to great effect.
I hope he's a little janky. Like they didn't do that much in this beginning, but that's a fun idea that it's like they didn't spend $6 billion.
Right. And, so if you don't know anything about the title, if you don't know anything about the character or anything like that, it's still a really good, really fun introduction. So look forward to that. Another one coming out March 6th. This is from Dark Horse Comics, Black Hammer 1945, number one. Now, this is by Matt Kent and Ray Fox. They collaborated on the story. Fox wrote it, and Matt Kent does the art. This is, you can probably figure out from the title, but taking his Black Hammer franchise back in time, it's riffing off of the Blackhawks from DC Universe and a bunch of other titles like that. Man, this is so good. Every one of these are so good.
The art is so cool. There's a lot. It's sort of like, I mean, it's definitely in Matt Kent's style. It's like sort of sketchy in different ways, but it feels like the big splash pages that you get a little bit later on in the issue are fantastic.
Yeah, how'd you feel about this one, Pete?
The art is. It took me a little bit to get used to, but once I did, I really got into it. I love the story. It really has a great pace and kind of sets things up with key flashbacks. I very much enjoyed it.
It takes a little while to understand how this connects to the general Black Hammer universe, but if you haven't been reading those titles, you can still pick this up if you're looking for a World War II style adventure with some absolutely insane visuals as the book goes on.
Very cool.
It's great.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's move on to one we can talk a little more openly about from Boombox Avant-Garde's number two. This is another title that I believe Pete and I talked about. We were very pleasantly surprised by the first issue, which reverses the paradigm so that there's an underdog sports team at an arts college instead of, I guess,
you the see other, what they did there?
Yeah.
Instead of putting they flip on a show. Because yeah, you have the artists be the people who are underdogs normally, but it's actually the sports people.
So what do you think about the second issue? And for you, Justin, jumping into this for the first time.
Yeah, actually, I think we did talk about this as a group together because I'm here sometimes.
I just assume any of the old titles you just weren't paying attention to.
First time, long time. So great. It's good comic book, 8.5 by 11, stapled together.
Great. Thanks, Justin.
Pete, no.
Did you also think it had staples, or what was your take?
Yeah, I also really enjoyed the stapling here. So well placed. No, I feel like...
I got to be honest. Most comics you read these days, staples all over the place.
All over the place.
Sometimes just like in the cover.
Just a bag full of them in there.
Bunch of loose pages.
Yeah. Loose pages, bag full of staples. I like this a lot. It really lets you get into the heads of the characters, and I do think... So the first two issues have been all about, like, we got to get this girl to play basketball. Mm-hmm. And you know she's going to play. So, I was like, just let's get to the playing. And this issue is sort of broken up with, like, all the different characters, which I think is a great way to introduce the characters and sort of get their character games out there.
Right.
But by the third one, I was like, okay, let's see this basketball.
Well, you're psyched to see basketball. Yeah, you're pumped, probably going to see it next issue.
I also like that they're sort of just fine at basketball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'll get better.
Yeah, no, I'm sure those stories work. But I feel like it would be like an easy. You would fall in the trap of like they're going to all be awesome, or this new player is going to be the best one, and it's not. Everyone's just normal and just like no, we want to be friends. It feels like the motivator, and then the basketball is just what they do. And I like that sort of more naturalistic ease of storytelling.
It's like the opposite of us. This is what we do, but you're constantly pushing.
Because we're great at basketball.
Oh, we should mention, actually, that we have a basketball team.
Yeah, we are. Any other podcast that wants to challenge us to a 3-on-3 tournament.
I'm not going to carry both on a fucking basketball court.
I'll tell you what. I don't think you're good at basketball.
I am good at basketball.
Do you guys remember back in the day when we took on AI Fanboy and we fucking killed them?
Yeah, their podcast is over because they're dead.
Oh, come on, man.
We murdered them.
That's not...
They actually still do their podcast as well.
Oh, cool.
Fantastic Four number 7 from Marvel Comics.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, cool, dude. Hoop it up. Yeah. Got that basketball vibe. Hoop it up.
So Dan Slott is writing this title. The Fantastic Four is in Latveria. Doom has a big plan to do something with Galactus. We find out a little bit more about that this particular issue. I think Dan Slott is doing a good job of weaving the absolutely batshit insane ways the continuity has taken, in particular Dr. Doom and Galactus, repainting them as villains while not ignoring the continuity of what's happened before, which is super tricky to do.
It is tricky, and honestly, I could have done with a little less of that. Like, I don't.
Sure.
I feel like at this point, in the way the Marvel Universe has been sort of fractured a lot lately, and the way they're using their characters across all these different events, it's sort of fine to lose a couple little continuity hits if you can just like continue telling the story. Because this felt like a very like middling issue where I was like, you sort of like touch it, resetting a couple things in the table, but the meal hasn't come yet.
Hmm. What did you think about it, Pete?
I love Doom. I love Galactus. This was a fun issue. I think Dan Slott's writing the crap out of this.
All right. Very cool. Wow. Invisible Kingdom out March 20th from Dark Horse Comics, I want to say. This is from G. Willow Wilson, late of Miss Marvel, among other things. What did you guys think about this book?
I liked this a lot. It felt like... the story didn't go where I expected.
Wait, which one are we talking about?
Invisible Kingdom.
Oh, this was my fucking jam.
Really?
This was my shit.
Give it to us.
I love this book. First off, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. Unbelievable world they're setting up. Super creepy, super weird. You have these two kind of different stories happening same time. I'm not
sure. Simultaneously. Yeah, I think so.
But man, it's, I love the way, like, by the end, we're kind of like, you get things tied in. I'm super into this.
I think what we can tell you is there's two characters that are essentially working at an interstellar UPS, and then there's one character that is entering a very strange alien nunnery.
Can't see.
What?
You can't see in that nunnery.
Yeah, you can't see in that nunnery.
No eyes.
I don't think it's too much to say that those stories start to come together by the end of the issue.
Yeah.
In, as Pete said, a very surprising way. It's definitely a slow burn, but this is one of the... We've talked a lot about how these sci-fi books have a very typical, like... Okay, we're going to get to the premise at the end of the first issue. That's not what happens here at all. It is setting up the world, but things are actually happening in that world, but you don't see how they fit together, at least initially.
And they do a great... I'm sorry, Justin. They do a great job of like setting up two very different, interesting characters that make you like follow what's going on in a way where you're not like, okay, get to it, or you know, I'm not sure what's going on. I feel like they do it in such a... creative, artistic way that you don't mind the journey that you're kind of being led on.
Yeah, I agree. The details up top just keep you interested. I'm dying to know what's happening with both sides of these stories, and the fact that they are going to come together is an added bonus.
There you go. Moving on to an outer space story we can talk about, also from Boom Studios, Firefly number 4. We've been loving this book. This is one of my favorite issues so far. Mm. So funny, so well done. Mal and company are under siege on a planet. There's a bunch of different forces that are trying to kill them all at the same time. And the way that Greg Pak writes this issue, like, there's been some super dark stuff that had happened. This one is the funny one. Like, this is...
It's Greg Pak. I mean, the guy's hilarious.
The guy's a comedy legend. He's a kick in the pants.
Yeah. This is the crew of the Serenity basically using all of their wiles to work one over on as many people as possible.
Yeah.
I thought it was great.
Yeah, it's the exchange where they're trying to find out who's the worst sinner, because that's the order they're going to be killed in. who sinned the least dies first, I guess, is what they are saying. And so it's fun to see them sort of arguing against. They're like, I'm a bad person, over and over again. Right. Great. Super fun game.
Yeah.
Into it.
I also love the moment where it was like, is there a different Boss Moon? That because it's just like, because the one we know, and I really like that whole...
They've also done a really good job of creating characters that make sense and feel organic to the Firefly universe while they are totally new. Very enjoyable series.
I also felt like they left it in such a great kind of end period where you really want to know what's going to happen next.
Yeah, this title, very good.
Greg Pak, man.
To one of our absolute favorite comics from Image Comics, Ice Cream Man, number 10.
Man.
Now, for those of you who haven't been keeping up with this, this has been essentially an anthology comic with some horror stories that had rough linkage up until the last issue when the world exploded outwards. And we found out that it's this almost war between these two characters, one of whom's this demonic ice cream man sometimes, and another character who seems to be good, though we don't know a lot of the backstory.
And he's a cowboy.
Yeah, and he's a cowboy.
He's a cowboy.
This issue, at least half of it, is told in Spanish. It takes place a little bit around Dios de los Muertos.
Yep. On the border.
And we have these two characters very specifically worked into the story. Great as usual, I think.
That this was extra frustrating for me because
really
I can deal with horror and scary shit. Okay, fine. But now you're going to bring in this love story where it's like this poor guy is trying to save this girl and do the right thing. And then it doesn't get to happen because of this evil ice cream man who's been like, oh. It makes it so much worse than I already thought it was.
Hey, to be honest, he didn't sell a lot of ice cream in this.
Yeah, you know.
He was a general.
This is, if you haven't read the title, at the end of every issue, they show a tally of how much ice cream he's sold and how much money he's made.
Bad day just for ice cream sales.
Not good.
Plus, hot down there. Everyone wanted an ice cream.
Oh, man.
You could see a bunch of the characters were licking their lips.
Yeah.
And this thinking about ice this cream. Comic is like, it's almost like they're like, oh, you think you have this figured out? Ha ha! Left turn.
But I think I love that they keep it. It's just about telling these stories. They do such a good job of making them stand alone and be interesting by themselves. Sort of thematically touch on just a different like type of horror. This one about like thinking you have your life all worked out, and then the horror that it doesn't work out. But the true horror is that it works out like better for other people. Yeah. And so that, like, it's just great. It's just great top to bottom.
Another Dark Horse comic that's coming out March 6th, Oh Baby. That's the name of the comic book.
You didn't say Oh Baby. You said Obey Me.
Oh Baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What? Obey Me.
Obey Me.
You're saying Oh Baby.
Yeah, it sounds like you're saying Oh Baby.
It's Obey Me.
Oh yeah. Baby.
Whatever you're saying, it's wrong.
Oh Baby.
It did sound like you said Oh Baby.
Oh Baby.
I was like, I didn't read a comic called that.
I have a very stuffy nose for my entire life.
Ooh, so. Fun detail about one of your hosts. Stuffed up. Stuffed as a motherfucker.
Just always. Like, literally always. So when I say things like, oh, baby, it sounds like, oh, baby.
Oh, honestly, I don't know, even tell. Know what you're saying.
Yeah. What did you guys think about this comic?
This comic, Obey Me. This one was fun. It was
sure.
This was really weird, man.
It was weird. I don't quite. So I liked the monster hunting aspect of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Without getting too much of spoilers, I think we could talk about the general concept of the book, that it's about this soul reaper that goes to collect a soul from a mobster. It's basically one long action sequence as she teams up with the demonic dog. Yeah. I didn't love it.
It's hard to tell what's going, because at the end it's we don't understand quite how her powers work.
Yeah.
But then the character's like, I don't know if that's how your powers work. And I was like, me and you both, hell dog.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. It kept revealing
stuff. I thought you would
like
this, though, because it was mostly action and killing.
No, I love that part, but then it was
And hell dog.
Yeah, hell dog I liked.
Yeah. I don't know. I think about there's a demonic dog over the Avengers right now. That's a pretty good demonic dog, and this doesn't quite get to them.
Thorry.
No, there's Thorry in Thor, but there's another demon dog that Jason Aaron is writing in Avengers.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Who works for the vampires. He's a vampire
dog. The vampire with a gas mask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
General...
I don't know, man. We're reading like 15 comics in this episode, and you're like, name another specific character that was just made up for the Blade arc in the Avengers.
Shadow Colonel.
Yeah, cool. Shadow Colonel.
There we go. That's a review of Oh Baby.
Shadow Colonel.
Moving on to a very advanced Valiant Comics review, Punk Mambo number one. This isn't out until April 24th, but we got a very advanced look at that one. I got to say, the magic side of the Valiant world is not my absolute favorite side. But this is by Colin Bunn. I enjoyed this.
I like this one a lot, too. Yeah. And we can't talk too much about it, but it was cool.
Yeah, but you can talk a little more than that.
You can talk more?
Yeah.
Where are the lines?
I don't know.
Pete, we'll what did you think?
Make up the lines every day, oh baby.
It was crazy because it's a lot of twists and turns just when I was like, okay, cool, this is what's happening. And then something else would happen, which was a little frustrating because I liked where it started. And then it kind of got off its rails a little bit. But I like the main character. I like what's going on. So I'm on board.
You got a punk rocker from way back fighting a bunch of people. Like, it's cool.
Yeah. It's Punk Mambo is wandering around. She's feeling a little bit lost. She goes.
She's immortal.
She
Spoiler,
goes
guys. Jeez.
No, we already know that.
That's fine.
She's part of the Valiant Universe.
Seems like you're revealing too much.
Due to events that have happened recently in the Valiant Universe with Shadow Man and others, she's been a little cut off from her powers, so ends up going on a quest to regain some of those. Cullen Bunn, great at horror, so he works that in the air. There's some really creepy characters going on, but it's fun superhero stuff at the same time, and Punk Mambo is like John Constantine, but a lady.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Does she? I don't think she smokes as much as he does.
True, but that's not his defining characteristic.
That's true, it's not.
His defining characteristic is that he has his tie a little loose.
That's a good call.
Yeah.
And a trench coat.
Another trench advanced coat. Review coming out March 6th from Dark Horse, Astro Hustle number one. This one was fine.
All these comics have similar names.
Yeah. I do feel baby, like at
Astro
this point,
Hustle,
we're
Punk
just
Mambo.
Being like, kaboom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
What was that?
Yes, Astro Hustle.
Yes.
This is dude in space who's doing an Astro Hustle.
Yeah, and there's some pirates and stuff. It's supposed to be like a 70s French sci-fi comic, and it channels that very well. To be honest, that's not totally my thing, but if you do like that, I do think it nails that particular aesthetic. Pete, what do you think about this book?
I love this book. It's crazy. It's over the top. It's hard to make sense of it. Yeah, I think it's very creative and worth picking up.
Yeah,
and the art's fantastic.
They jump around a little bit in sort of this timeline of the story, I thought, in a cool way. And you it sets up some mysteries that I'm curious about. And it has sort of a if Star Wars were, like, you know, a little funkier. Is that fair?
I also felt bad for the captain there at the end there.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. Poor captain, huh?
Yeah.
Last one we're going to talk about from DC Comics, Detective Comics number 999. And, ooh, man, this comic was very good.
Yeah.
Now, if you have been reading the ongoing title, this one is by James Tomasi. James Tomasi? Peter Tomasi.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I have completely lost words at this point. Peter Tomasi, Batman has been dealing with some sort of morphing foe who seems to be killing all of the people who trained him.
Impossibly. Like, yes. Doing things that seem like it couldn't be possible.
Yes. And we've been taking this journey through Batman's history. It all gets revealed this issue. The reveal is so good. The writing is so good. The art is so good. I honestly do not know how they're going to top this run with Detective Comics number 1000, because I have loved this arc so much. It feels like the perfect anniversary tribute to Batman.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it, and it's so funny to have this playing alongside Tom King's epic run, because it's dealing with, like, these big sweeping stories about, like, what is Batman, why is Batman, and is Batman finally facing something that can really, like, destroy everything. And they're similar themes, but they're finding a way, each different story, to, like, take down Batman in a different way. And we've seen that story hundreds of times. Like, is Batman finally going to lose? And these feel different.
Yeah. Pete, you raised your hand. You have a question?
I have a question.
Yes, great.
That's not Robin, right?
What?
The little kid that he's fighting in this fucking
comic. Did you read the book? Did you read the words of the book?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to spoil it now for you, Pete. That little Batman?
Yeah.
That's Batman.
Yeah.
What the fuck is going on?
And do you notice he grows up a little bit?
Right. He gets bigger. And
like
Batman,
you did.
Comments
like you did when you were little Pete.
Yeah.
And now you're
super confused by. I tried to read this
Batman,
comic like three times.
It is revealed, puts himself into a virtual reality simulator every year on his birthday and makes himself forget what's happening and challenges himself essentially to a death duel. It gets harder every single year. The object is to make him the strongest Batman he possibly can be, because he does not want to end up in a situation in real life where he's not able to Batman his way out of it.
Yeah.
And so
at the end of this comic, he just take off the visors and everything we saw has just been his virtual. Yes.
But he almost died, too.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you, it's like, let me put it in terms you can understand. Wolverine.
Okay.
It's like that arc where Wolverine would die and then he would have to fight another dude.
Yeah.
That's what this is.
He had to fight his way like through hell and stuff.
Due to the sword. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's still technically in continuity, right?
I don't think so. But cool, because that was back when they depowered Wolverine a little bit from then, because that was back when truly any blood's like Lobo. If one little blood speck was left on his adamantium bones, he would be like, I'm coming. I'm growing back. But that's what this is like. Wolverine challenged, tested every time, so when you come back, you'd be stronger.
Cool. I just wish that was a little clearer.
They said it.
They didn't.
The words in the book.
Well, they didn't say it out loud.
I read it.
Right.
Yeah.
They didn't say it to you.
Yeah, the words were in your brain.
Oh, cool.
Like where reading goes.
Thanks.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's guys, like, I'll tell you where the money goes. The money goes to patreon.com/comicbookclub, which helps support this show and podcast and many others. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on down. We'll do too many reviews at your face. Right?
Oh, nice.
My God.
Pete, what else do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our live show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for the podcast of Boar, and we'll see you at Oh Baby.
Oh Baby.
You guys both.